Living with coronavirus, some European countries are calling for a new approach towards COVID-19. They say it shouldn't be dealt as a health emergency, but as an illness. But does that convince anyone? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. After 2 years of crippling waves of coronavirus, strict lockdowns and hundreds of thousands of people dead, several European countries are hoping to treat the pandemic as a thing of the past. The latest Omicron variant wave has broken infection records across the continent. Daily infections have so far exceeded the peaks of earlier waves, with France alone reporting nearly 500,000 cases on Tuesday. But hospital admissions and deaths from Omicron infections are way down compared to previous variants, especially for those who are fully vaccinated. Several European countries see those figures as a sign the disease can be treated as endemic, another of many illnesses that we've learned to live with. Spain is one of the hardest hit economies on the continent and has led calls for restrictions to soon be dropped. Portugal has already eased major curbs on crowded venues, and the UK and Ireland are set to drop most restrictions over the next week. But the World Health Organization has warned the world is far from declaring the pandemic over, and the death rate is too high to treat coronavirus as another endemic disease.
Now is not the time to give up on the strategy. We're hearing a lot of people suggest that Omicron is the last variant, that it's over after this. And that is not the case, because this virus is circulating at a very intense level around the world. And so it is not the time to give up on the comprehensive strategy that we have outlined, that many countries are using. And as Mike has said, implement them in different ways. But the goals of reducing severe disease and death remain.
This pandemic is nowhere near over, and with the incredible growth of Omicron globally, new variants are likely to emerge.
For more on this, I'm joined by our guest in Singapore. Tiki Pongesto is visiting professor at the Yu Lu Lin School of Medicine at National University of Singapore and a former WHO director specialising in pandemic preparedness and global health governance. In Oxford, we have Dr. Mohga Kamaliani, a consultant on global health and senior health policy advisor for People's Vaccine Alliance. In Cambridge, we have Chris Smith, a consultant virologist and clinical microbiology specialist. Chris is also editor and host of the Naked Scientist podcast. Warm welcome to all. Tiki, Singapore is starting to move away towards treating COVID-19 as an illness. What does that mean for the country?
Well, I think the Singapore government has taken a very pragmatic approach towards, as you said, living with the virus. And I think it has done so in a very pragmatic manner based on sort of like three legs of a stool. Mm-hmm. It is based on good governance in the context of having a very coordinated, harmonious and single-minded response to deal with the pandemic. The second one is a very robust healthcare system that is able to deal with any surges in severe cases of COVID-19. And finally, and perhaps very importantly as well, is social capital, a population which is very trusting of the government and ready to follow government recommendations and instructions. Mm-hmm. So as a result, it has succeeded very well. And I think it's on the right path to living sustainably and safely with the virus.
Mohga, is it fair for European countries to say it's about time to turn the chapter, move forward towards more relaxed lifestyle, when you have sub-Saharan Africa lagging far behind in terms of vaccinations?
Well, from the beginning of the virus, we've been hearing nobody's safe until everybody's safe. It's just words. It doesn't mean anything. Because what is happening is high level of vaccination in Europe, and that's why they feel a little bit, well, they feel comfortable to remove restrictions, while, as you said, very little vaccination rates in many low-income countries, including in sub-Saharan Africa. So basically, globally, we have a wonderful environment for the virus to mutate. Some people are vaccinated, some people are not vaccinated. So the virus will just mutate, creating new variants. The new variants will reach Europe and other countries, and then we start screaming. And the other thing is, while this more removing restrictions is happening now, a lot of the doctors in the UK are saying this is not based on data. So it seems like it's a political decision rather than a scientific decision. When the NHS, we have, just like Singapore, we have a fantastic health system in the UK. However, it is really under huge stress because of the number of people who are, because of COVID and the implication of COVID and the long list of people that had to delay their, tests or other treatments not related to COVID-19.
Chris,
will increase with the removing restrictions.
Okay. Chris, when we say that starting from the next surge of infections, it's about time to treat COVID not as an emergency, but as an illness that we have to deal with because it's going to stay for longer, it sounds easier on paper than in practical terms.
I think it's very important to see the situation through the lens of the here and now and not the lens of last year. Because this time last year, taking the UK as an example, the number of people who were dying every day was about 1,500 at one point. And the number of people in hospital accounted for nearly half of all of the beds that we have in our National Health Service. We couldn't be more different now, where although we do have people in hospital, probably half of them are in hospital with coronavirus, not because of coronavirus, which is completely different from last year. And the number of people who are losing their lives is a fraction of where we were. And the reason that's happened is that we've been able to transform the condition from what was lethal for some into trivial for almost everyone. And that's thanks to vaccines. Mm-hmm. And we have other weapons to throw at this now in the form of antivirus drugs. It's not a given that if we vaccinate everybody, we will no longer face variants, because the sobering prospect and the sobering observation is that Omicron, which has brought many countries back to the brink of lockdowns or actually physically into lockdowns, this emerged in the context of South Africa, which was pretty highly vaccinated as African countries go. And they were declaring at the time Omicron emerged just a few hundred cases per day, while the UK, for example, was having up to 50,000. So it's not a given that vaccines stop variants. But what we can do with vaccines based on the UK and other countries' experience is we can convert severe disease into trivial disease. And that should be our goal. Yes, we need to aim to stop people dying, and that means across the entire world. But we shouldn't kid ourselves that this, as soon as we achieve that magic vaccination of the world, the COVID disaster is over, because it isn't. But what we will have done is to stop people dying.
Tiki, this is exactly what people are concerned about, which is basically this false hope that this could be the beginning of the end of an era and the beginning of a post-COVID-19 era. Because Singapore, for example, started with a zero-tolerance approach. Now it's starting to relax most of the restrictions because it has met somehow 90% the threshold of vaccinations. But we've seen a surge of infections recently. Couldn't this be the concern facing Singapore in the near future?
Well, I think the surge in infection with the arrival of Omicron is something that the Singapore government definitely foresaw and, were very prepared for. And the way they dealt with this was not to reimpose restrictions or lockdowns, not even increasing travel restrictions from other countries, but continuing with the surveillance, continuing importantly with vaccination, providing boosters, and more recently, providing immunization to the younger children, 5 to 12 and 12 to 17. And once again, ensuring that the healthcare system was ready. And we have seen just in the last few days that even amongst children that have been given the vaccine, there were no issues with any serious side effects, very mild symptoms, as we know, in the younger age group. A couple of hospitalizations, but nothing that required ICU, for example. So I think, you know, the reality is that, you know, the virus is already out there. Cat's out of the box. Mm-hmm. So as mentioned just now, the real issue is to prevent people from dying. I mean, the vaccine is not going to prevent infection.
Mohga, now, countries like Spain have been battered economically by COVID-19, and they're basically saying we cannot continue like that, otherwise the country will collapse. Don't you see that for that particular reason, it's about time for the scientific community to start thinking seriously about shaping our post-COVID-19 world?
Well, there are already, you know, talks and debates and studies about shaping the post-COVID-19. I'm not advocating for lockdown, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm advocating for good measures. And one of the immediate good measures is vaccinating the rest of the world. Yes, you can protect people in the UK from dying from COVID, but how about people in other countries that are not protected? So it's one thing. You get data in the UK and in South Africa, but many other countries don't have this data. So you actually don't know how many people are infected, how many people are dying, because the data is not really good. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we can't say, oh, it's not killing people in sub-Saharan Africa. It's we just don't know the accurate data. But the important thing is about, just like we reached, or Singapore reached 90%, other countries need to reach that level. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, yes, COVID will stay with us, just like flu is staying with us. Just like, I mean, you know, the world managed to get rid of one virus only that affects mm-hmm. human beings. One affects animal and one affects human being. That's all. We only have smallpox out. Mm-hmm. And everything else we live with vaccination. Mm-hmm. Kids all over the world are vaccinated against measles, but there is still measles. We still haven't got rid of, totally, utterly, of measles or polio. So with vaccination, we're controlling it. Mm-hmm. Now, for COVID, the vaccines we have, as the speaker from Cambridge said, you know, yes, cut mortality and cut the high level of morbidity, you know, the illness, but it doesn't cut transmission. Mm-hmm. So we still need more research for better vaccines. These should not be, here are the vaccines we have and that's it. We should really aim for better vaccines. But meantime, we have effective vaccines, very good vaccines around, and these should be available to other countries so that they don't have mutation. And just look at the serious mutation, the serious variant. So the first variant, Alpha came, Alpha started in the UK when there was no vaccines in the UK. Mm-hmm. Delta started and spread in India when the level of vaccination in India was hugely low, very low. It was under 5%. And then this one, Omicron, started in South Africa with, again, low vaccination. So it's, yes, South Africa compared to, let's say, DRC or Burundi, of course it has higher vaccination. But let's compare South Africa to the UK.
All right.
No, it has low vaccination. So low vaccination rates. So
I see your point.
We need high vaccinations in all low middle income countries.
All right.
Then we can be safe.
Chris, the problem with trying to transition towards a new era is basically some people might think this could be an indication we're going back to before the 2020. The problem here is you have the concern there, you have the at-risk people, you have the patients with complications, and you have to bear in mind that you need to maintain a massive vaccination campaign to be able to tell confidently your own people, you know what, we could live with COVID the way it is in the near future. But we're talking about decisions that are likely to have huge economical, financial ramifications on many countries in Europe if they want to succeed their path?
Well, I actually don't agree, because we've always had that vulnerable population, and so has every other country. We have just told them they're more vulnerable this year, so more people are worried. Previously, they were blissfully unaware. But that's why we've had a flu vaccination campaign that's run for decades, very, very successful, about 60, 70% vaccine effectiveness every single year. And that's based on the whole world talking to each other, sharing flu data, working out what to put into the vaccines, and then orchestrating, because the flu season is so predictable, orchestrating a vaccination campaign, which is well understood. We understand how to deploy it, how best to use it, and we know it works, and it protects the most vulnerable. This isn't really any different. I strongly suspect that this will settle down to become a seasonally surging infection. Coronaviruses do circulate all the time, but they're much more common in wintertime. And the common human coronaviruses, there are four of them that cause colds. They're around about 5-10% of the colds that we get in winter. So we can probably predict that in the future, what's currently causing COVID, SARS-CoV-2, is going to circulate more often in the winter. We can anticipate that. We can give people a vaccine top-up if they're in a particularly vulnerable group. But most people are not vulnerable to this virus. Most people actually will be absolutely fine. And half the time, they won't have any symptoms whatsoever. So really, that's not that much different than the flu. So I think this is something that we can use prior learning, prior knowledge and prior practice and put it into practice to protect those people who need protecting.
Tiki, why is the W Health Organization concerned about an immediate shift towards a post-COVID-19 reality?
Well, I think the concern about a premature sort of acceptance that, you know, it is already going to become endemic, that we have less to worry about, I think has to do with what has been mentioned before, that as long as there are pockets in other parts of the world where the vaccination coverage is less than what is needed, the virus is still going to continue to circulate, to be transmitted, and new variants are going to appear. So, you know, it's a cliche that no one is safe until everyone is safe. But, you know, that's the reality. So I think the WHO is concerned that some countries have taken the path towards a more relaxed attitude. And plus the fact that Omicron, the evidence is that it's causing sort of a milder disease. It has, I think what they're concerned about is a sort of false sense of security. Okay. Just to remind the world that there are pockets of unvaccinated people, and as long as those exist, it poses a continuing risk.
Mohga, the WHO is also saying that for COVID-19 to become an endemic disease, we have to have more data to be able to say we know, we can predict how the virus is going to move forward in the near future. So for the time being, we don't have that data, and therefore we want the countries to become more cautious in the near future of deciding to move forward towards any new approach towards tackling COVID-19.
Well, I mean, data obviously is critical for decisions, for health decisions, health policy decisions for each country, but also globally. And I think in investing in data, in surveillance, in lab tests and all that is critical in countries. And that means, I mean, data don't come from the sky, or they don't come from just having, you know, lots of epidemiologists. It comes from having reliable, trusted, trained, well-paid community health workers. These are the people in the community that have the community trust that can actually collect proper data and send it to be analyzed and collated together at a country level and then at a global level. And based on that, countries can make their own decisions. And globally, WHO and other international agency can give, if you like, the global guidelines of how to respond. But again, you know, until we have high level of vaccination, until we reach, at least we reach the target of 70% of people in each country are and each community are vaccinated, we will still be, okay, you know, locked down, this and that, and not really having a clear vision of what's next. And that should be the priority.
It's, I see,
still
your point.
Not the priority.
For you, the benchmark is 65 to 70% vaccination throughout the community for those countries to move forward. Chris, now, the premise of this whole lockdown rationale in the past was basically world leaders were pretty much concerned about the health system being overwhelmed by a number of patients needing ICUs. That could just mean that their health system would collapse. And this is why they went for drastic approach. Now, countries are saying it's about time to change that and relax the codes. One of the questions that many people are asking, what if tomorrow or the day after we have a new aggressive variant? Could that bring us back to square one?
Well, you never say never in medicine. And I think the way to think about this is that in the UK, in the 1940s, we had a world war and people periodically were subject to being bombed by foreign planes. It doesn't mean that they spent their entire life living in an air raid shelter. What they did was to build a bomb shelter and they had sirens. And when the warning signals went off, people reacted accordingly. And I think we've got to think about, we've got to live our lives knowing that there is this potential threat, but it's not going to be ever present at the same degree of severity. So we therefore have a population who are aware of that and can react accordingly. And we've sort of seen that begin to happen over Christmas, because prior to Christmas, various measures were put in place. But people, as far as we can tell, went further than those measures required in order to keep themselves safe, which shows that people can judge the risk and they can be trusted to do so. So I think it's not unreasonable for us to plan for a future where we can alert people to threats that are coming. We knew that Omicron was coming. We had several weeks of lead time on that, thanks to South Africa spotting it and then people acting accordingly. In this instance, perhaps there was an overreaction, but it was a cautious overreaction. Mm. We can do this. So I think in the future, we have no reason to doubt that that the measures won't work, because they do work.
Okay.
We just want to minimise the harm, because otherwise there's a risk that the pill is worse than the ill.
Briefly, Tiki, if you don't mind, do you think that a first booster, a second booster, a third, a fourth, a fifth, a second, a sixth is going to be the norm in the near future for us to be able to shield the communities against COVID-19?
Well, I think that decision will have to be made by individual countries. You know, from my own personal view, I think the third booster is very well justified, especially for, you know, those who are vulnerable, older people with underlying morbidities, et cetera, et cetera. As to the value of a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth, I'm not so convinced. As an immunologist, there is a concept called immunological energy, where if you keep repeating doses, you may actually get a lower reaction. But that's just my personal view.
Mohga, you work for the, at the same time, for the People's Vaccine Alliance, which says that it's about time for the international community to come together, ensure that doses are manufactured globally, that the intellectual property issue is dealt with so that vaccines are manufactured by any company that wishes to do so, and that we have to provide people with vaccines and treatment free of charge in the near future. Do you see that implemented in the near future?
Well, we're working hard to get that implemented. It's about sharing. It's not just intellectual property, but it's about sharing knowledge of the vaccines. So, for example, the African Union with the South African government and the WHO set up an mRNA hub in South Africa. Now, if a company like Moderna shared the knowledge of the vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, which is totally, utterly funded by taxpayer, American taxpayer, if they share that knowledge, then the hub can enable capable companies, it's not any odd company, to produce enough for people in developing countries rather than now totally relying on the charity of the pharmaceutical companies.
Unfortunately,
that's
running
not
out.
Good for sustainability. Yeah.
See your point. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Mohga Kamal, Yanni, Tiki Pangiso and Chris Smith, I really appreciate your insight and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Al-Bara, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.